This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. If you want to know what it takes to get a TV series on the air, my guest Tom Fontana is a good person to ask. He's an executive producer and writer for the new NBC series Homicide, about homicide detectives. It's been on for 6 weeks, and Fontana is already at work on a pilot for a new ABC series scheduled for the fall about firefighters. Fontana has also been a producer and head writer for St. Elsewhere, and executive producer and writer on Tattingers and Home Fires. Homicide is as much about character as it is about crime solving. In this scene, a rookie homicide detective is in the car with his more experienced and cynical partner.
You know something? You said to me something the other day. You said that I would never be a homicide detective because I don't have a killer's mind.
Mm-hmm.
So do you?
Do what? Do I have the killer's mind?
Yeah.
Do me a favor. Take a look outside there. Tell me what you see.
Now, let's see. I see people hanging out on their stoops. I see some trees. I see a grocery store.
Okay, I look out here and I see the same stuff, but all this stuff has my name written on it, just like the criminal. I see unlocked cars. I see snatchable pocketbooks. I see windows open just a crack.
What does this have to do with murder? That's funny.
Don't you get that?
What?
That's my point exactly, Bayless.
Homicide has a couple of things in common with St. Elsewhere. Each episode tells several interconnecting stories. Most episodes end with unresolved stories that continue into the next week. Fontana told me it's getting difficult to sell these kinds of shows.
In foreign markets, they just want a lot of single-episode shows of a series so that they can show them in any order. And if they have to do them, chronologically, the foreign distributors get ticked off about that. So in that regard, that's the one reason why I think you see a decline in that kind of storytelling in television. To me, again, that's what's attractive to me about television, because it's like writing a novel. Every week you get to do another chapter, and it's not like reinventing everything, every week.
What were some of the lessons you learned from St. Elsewhere about what you have to do to make that continuing storyline work?
Well, I think that one of the mistakes we made early on in St. Elsewhere was not allowing the audience to get to care about the patient, so that when we killed the patient, which we always did, we wanted the audience to have some kind of an emotional response to that. The way we did that was by tying it into the doctor or nurse who was taking care of that particular patient. On Homicide, it's a little different because the focus of the story is a person who's been murdered. So you don't really have a lot of communication between the detective and the murder victim. So what we've tried to do with Homicide is to deal with it much more on the relationships between the two detectives working on the case, and kind of the horror of what they experience on a day-to-day basis. I mean, these are guys who every day they go to work, their job is to look at a dead body, something that most of us do maybe once in a lifetime and are repulsed by it then.
You know, in soap operas, the action takes place really, really slowly. So I'll tell you, if you miss an episode, you probably haven't missed anything. How much action do you figure can happen in each episode and still have the audience keep up?
Well, we've never concerned ourselves, in the shows that I've worked on, we've never concerned ourselves with, keeping the audience up. Our feeling is that if you do a show that there's a continuing story, you always put in one self-contained story, so that hopefully the audience would be satisfied if they've never seen the show before.
Mm-hmm.
There's one story that has a beginning, middle, and an end within the hour that they would, they'd be satisfied by.
Now, there's an episode where you kind of didn't do that. There was an episode, this was last week, actually, in which the whole the whole program was one long interrogation. It was two cops on a case where, and this case has been on since virtually the beginning of the series, an 11-year-old is butchered by somebody. And this is the person who one of the cops really believes did it. And after this virtually hour-long interrogation, it's still ambiguous.
Right. That's the kind of writing I do. it's funny that because there a couple reviews came out, one in the New York Times and one in the LA Times, that talked about that particular episode. I wrote that episode.
I know.
And it talked about that particular show's ambiguity and enigmatic nature, and I kind of read them and went, "Oh my God, I'm enigmatic. I'm ambiguous. I never knew that." So,
when you're doing a series, you write a lot of the episodes.
Yeah. What I do is I tend to conceive the story for the episode, and then hire a freelance writer or a story editor who's on staff. They then do like two drafts of the script, and then it comes back to me. Well, each draft comes back to me for notes, and then the draft comes back to me for final for a polish, and that's pretty much, you know, I have the final say. Then I get notes from the network and the censors and the studio and, you know, everybody's and their grandmother. But pretty much, you know, I do the final script that goes out of the set, and if the actors have any changes, they come and deal with me about them.
Now, how do you feel about this idea of conceiving of the story and giving it out to a freelancer to actually write?
Well, it's actually a lot better for me than it is for the freelancer because I conceive it, and because I get it at the end, I can make sure that the story I wanted to tell gets told. I think it's a little frustrating to be a freelance writer in television because you have no power whatsoever. The only reason I'm a producer is because I learned very quickly that in Hollywood, if you don't produce, if you're a writer and you don't produce, you're never going to see what you've written get on the screen. I always try to keep as much as I possibly can of the freelance writer stuff, but a lot of times they either just don't get it, or they, you know, it's just not what I had intended, and I haven't been able to convey to them properly what I was looking for.
I know you used to be a playwright. Does the playwright within you say, "This is no way to write"?
No, actually, I was a terrible playwright and a particularly unsuccessful playwright. So I've gotten more off my chest writing for television, and more people have seen it than, you know, I used to play to houses of six. And now, you know, 30 million people or 10 million people will see the show. And that's pretty juicy for a writer to know that that many people are at least going to, you know, on their way to the kitchen to get something, they'll be watching what you're doing.
The opening episode of Homicide was on just a few weeks ago, right after the Super Bowl, right?
Right.
Good
43
placement.
43 million people
yeah,
saw it.
Not bad. What are some of the burdens that an opening episode of a series has to carry?
Well, you know, it's very tough to write the first episode, because what you have to do is you have to introduce, in terms of an ensemble show, it's difficult. Not all pilots are difficult, but an ensemble show where you have 10 to 12 different characters, introducing those characters, defining those characters in a very short amount of time is very difficult. Then the added burden is, you know, you want the audience to like the 10 or 12 characters that you've introduced, because episodic television is about seeing friends. You know, every week you say, "Oh, let's go see what those knuckleheads at Cheers are doing," and so you want the audience to not necessarily identify so much as appreciate the characters on your show. So that's difficult because you only got 47 minutes or something like that. Then what you want to do is to try to come up with a story or stories, in the particular case of Homicide, that will indicate the kind of stories that you're going to tell on a week-to-week basis. Now, in the Homicide, the first episode of Homicide, we didn't really emphasize the story, and it wasn't really till the second episode that we really, really started to say, okay, well, here's the A, B, C, D side of the show. You know, here's a little journey that you're going to take each week with these people. One of the reasons we did that in the first episode is, again, because we wanted to say to the audience, whatever your expectation is of a cop show, you ain't going to get it here. And as dangerous as that is, because, you know, most people want to see things they're familiar with, we thought it was important to say that to the audience, to not lie to the audience and say, well, you're going to get to see them arrest somebody every week and it's going to be, you know, like a typical cop show.
So what were some of the expectations that you felt you had to dash early on?
Well, I think that, for example, the emphasis on the show is not on solving the murders. The emphasis is on the relationship between the partners. And so you might spend Whereas in a regular show, you'd spend, you know, 45 pages dealing with the murder and 10 pages dealing with the kind of buddy side of it, you know, the joking and the, oh, you know, jump in the car and all that stuff. We do the complete opposite. Most of it is about people kind of living their lives, and every once in a while they step over a dead body. The other thing is that we're not doing any car chases. We're not doing any gun shootouts, because most homicide detectives get there after the murder. You know, they're not a part of the action the way a uniform cop would be. And theirs is a much more intellectual kind of job than any other policeman. They're there doing research and investigation, and so the rhythm of their particular job is very different from anything. Most homicide shows, you see the cops and they're running and they're chasing and they're facing the bad guy and all that stuff. And in real life, it just doesn't happen that way. And because we were coming off of David Simon's book, and because we felt we had an obligation to the Baltimore homicide squad to depict them in an honest way, we kind of abandoned all that television storytelling.
My guest is Tom Fontana, an executive producer of the TV series Homicide, and he was a producer and the head writer for Saint Elsewhere. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Tom Fontana is my guest. You said that you get notes from the censors, from the networks, from the studio. What kind of notes do people give you when they're critiquing a script or an episode?
Well, the censors' notes are always very difficult to take, because they, for example, on one show, we had this sequence where one of the detectives was telling a Polish joke, and one of the other detectives was saying, well, why does it have to be Polish? And there was a discussion about, between a couple of the detectives, about why a Polish joke is a Polish joke as opposed to a Belgian joke, right? Now, I'm, besides being Italian-American, I'm Polish-American, and I didn't find the sequence particularly offensive as a Polish-American, because it was about exactly that. Why do people tell Polish jokes? It makes no difference. Well, the censors, you would have thought we had, taken Lech Walesa and, like, put paint all over him or something. I mean, the reaction was, oh, you can't make fun of Polish people. No, we're not making fun of Polish people. We're making fun of people who make Polish jokes. No, you can't do that. Anyway, you know, you fight and fight and fight. And part of it is you put stuff in, and then depending on how you're feeling that particular week, you know, you either fight for it or you say, forget it. I'll just cut it out. That week we fought for it, so it stayed in. And, you know, the notes from the network tend to be, oh, why can't they all hug each other? And, you know, wouldn't it be nice if they, you know, they actually, you know, captured somebody, or somebody, you know, said, I'll never do that again. You know, they always want the easiest kind of comforting resolution, because they have no, I'm amazed. I think that the network has virtually no faith in the intelligence or the sense of humor of the American public. I think they think America is just filled with completely stupid people who don't get anything, you know. And this is from, you know, guys, you know, middle-aged white guys who live in the Pacific Palisades, who know no more about the general American public than George Bush did.
Well, when you're starting to write or conceive of a series, are you always second-guessing what are the network executives going to want? What will the censor say?
Well, you try not to let that influence you too much. I mean, with St. Elsewhere, the hilarious thing was they constantly wanted to turn it into Young Dr. Kildare. And we did everything we could to resist that, because it's boring. It would be boring to write that every week.
What did you get the most grief for from the censors on that?
On St. Elsewhere?
Yeah.
We did a story about testicular cancer, and we weren't allowed to say, we actually got permission to say the word testicle, which was a huge breakthrough for them. We were not allowed to say the word balls, and it was about a bunch of college students, one college student in particular who had testicular cancer. And so it was kind of odd, these guys, you know, a bunch of college guys sitting around talking about testicles. But at least we got to say the word testicle. But what was incredible about it is they didn't want us to do the story at all. did not want us to do this. When they read it, they were freaked out, the censors. They said, you cannot cut off a guy's ball on national television. It's just, you can't do it. So we said, well, that's interesting, because last week we cut off a woman's breast and you didn't even raise an eyebrow about that. And that kind of made that problem go away. I mean, they suddenly went, you know, because we were going to go to the press with that. We were going to say, hey, oh, you know, it's okay to, like, do a mastectomy, but it's not to cut off a guy's ball on television. This is ridiculous. It's a double standard. And but the fight for what words you could use to say testicle was hilarious.
Now, you were going to go to the press if they didn't let you do that. That's a tough choice to make, isn't it? Because if you alienate the network too much, that's going to be a big problem for you.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, sometimes when, you know, it's one of these things where you know, they suck it in and you suck it in, and then eventually you, like, say, I'm pissy now. I'm in the mood for a fight. And what they do is they'll tend to back down, and then they'll kind of say, well, you're going to see, we're going to get letters, oh, it's going to be terrible, blah, blah, blah. And I guess for as often as they get letters, they don't get letters. I mean, what was the ironic part about the whole testicular cancer story was that the letters we got were from young guys who said they never knew about testicular cancer. They didn't know you could do a self-examination. They didn't know that they were particularly a risk group, and that they did the self-exam, found out that they had a lump, went to the doctor, and were alive because they had been watching St. Elsewhere. So, you know, those are the kind of letters you should just kind of go, nyan, 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 to the network with, because when you can really, you know, do something like that. I mean, we never did, well, I shouldn't say that. We often did things that we did just to piss them off. But a lot of times we were trying to be as responsible as we could possibly be. You know, we did a thing about a breast self-examination, and because one of our characters had breast cancer, and they wouldn't let us, oddly enough, they wouldn't let us show her do a self-exam, but they would let us show on a monitor the American Cancer Society's breast self-examination. So we had to do it like a session where a bunch of women were being instructed about, but you, a woman couldn't actually, I mean, we're still seeing a nipple on television, but because it was on a monitor, they thought that was okay somehow. It's that kind of thing that makes you crazy, because it all seems kind of arbitrary and ultimately it gets kind of debilitating.
Now, I want to ask you, the interrogation episode that you wrote?
For a homicide,
yeah. For homicide, did you sit in on interrogations before writing that?
No, what I did was, some of it is from David's book,
mm-hmm.
and some of it is from transcripts of interrogations that I read,
mm-hmm.
and from conversations that I had with the members of the Baltimore Homicide Squad. And then a part of it is just, you know, my imagination, because again, where I was coming at it from was less, this is a police interrogation, than this is three men in a room, each of whom wants something, you know? And what would you do, what would you say if you wanted something, you know? That's where I basically write from. It's from a character's
mm-hmm.
need, you know, at that moment. That's what they say, because at that moment, this is what they need.
How is homicide doing in the ratings? What are the measures you take seriously, and what are they saying to you?
Well, I not being very business smart, I don't really understand the numbers. I just know that that's the game. Those are the rules you play by. If you're going to work in television, it's the ratings that matter, because somebody decided that, you know, and I'm not about to be able to change that. So I accept the fact that if we get bad numbers, we have potentially going to be canceled. But on the other hand, when they break it down in such a way that you... you know, they start to explain it to you. It sounds like physics to me. I mean, I don't get any of it. I know that the third episode we had was opposite the Michael Jackson interview, so we got killed that week. Then we were preempted for President Clinton's speech, and by that point already, you know, people are out of the habit of watching the show. The next week we were opposite the Grammys. The next week we were opposite the American Comedy Awards. I mean, this week I think we're opposite the end of the world or something. I mean, you know, so as I said, part of doing a TV series is getting the audience familiar, getting them to watch the show every week. And if they have, if they're so busy watching everything else that it's hard for them to get an affinity for the show.
So what do you do now to try to...
We basically go to NBC and beg and plead
for
and
what?
Whine
for
and
what?
Snivel. Well, if we had more episodes, we only made 9 episodes. And if we had more episodes, we would have tried to get them to move us to another time period.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have any more, and because we only have, I think, 4 more shows that are going to air, we didn't ask them to move us. What we did was say, well, you're really going to judge us by these numbers, and what can we do to convince you to pick up the show for a second season?
So what were your favorite shows when you were growing up? You were born in 51, so...
51, yes.
You grew up in the 50s and 60s.
Yes. My absolute all-time favorite show, and this is going to shock you, was Green Acres. And to this day, I
You're
love...
right, that shocks me. Well, I have this thing that I do not comprehend Green Acres.
Really?
Yeah. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I just, with things like when they would like lift an egg up and it would say directed by so-and-so, I just, when I was a kid, I just thought that was the funniest thing in the world. I don't know. To me, it was existential television. You know what I mean? And today, when I watch it on Nick at Night or whatever, I like sit there and I go, God, this is just like I remember. But other than that, there, you know, I watched everything. I had the same bad taste that every, you know, kid growing up in the 50s. And then, you know, in the 60s, when I went to high school, I stopped watching television. And by the time I got to college, I guess I was watching Saturday Night Live. No, that was later. The Mary Tyler Moore Show, you know.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything on TV that really means something to you now, besides something professional?
You mean, is there like a show that I watch
mm-hmm.
regularly?
Yeah.
Well, I still love Cheers. I have to say that. And, but I, God's honest truth, and this is terrible to say it, but I don't watch much television. I don't go to the movies, because I have this weird thing where I'm a writer, I spend so much time in fantasy that to then sit down and watch 2 hours of somebody else's fantasy, do you know what I mean? It's kind
right.
of, I'm bored. I'd rather be out in the streets hanging out and, you know, playing pool and, I don't know, talking to friends and kind of seeing what's really going on.
Tom Fontana is the executive producer of Homicide, which airs Wednesday nights on NBC. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.